You build speed by building an efficient motion and then seeing how you can move as fast as you can using that motion. Here's the big misconception. Early extension is not a swing fault, regardless of what you've been told or what you think. It is a solution.
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast!
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
All right, Monty, thanks for hopping on the pod here today. I don't want to try and butcher your last name, so I'm hoping that you can pronounce it for not only myself and the audience.
You know, the running joke that I have, I didn't know how to spell it till I was 11. It's Scheinblum. And the irony of it is it was, you know, when the family came over through Ellis Island, it was a simple German name of about six letters. And it turned into this monstrosity.
Yeah. And how many letters is that now? 11? 1, 2, 10, 3, yeah. 4, 5, yeah, 10 letters. Yeah, I'd probably struggle to spell that too until I got into double digit. So it's all right. I appreciate it. I've been following you for a while on Instagram and quite frankly, love your stuff. But what I didn't know about you was that, but I guess before you were ever an instructor, you also played and then you were also a long drive champion. Is that accurate? Am I getting that right?
Yeah. It's now called the World Long Driving Champion. It's on ESPN. I finished second, first, and second in a three-year stretch, 91, 92, 93. And then, you know, I made it through a few stages of the Q School a number of times and almost won on what was then the Nike Tour, now the Korn Ferry Tour. Almost won on that a couple of times. Had a chance to win a couple times. Had a bunch of top finishes. And then, you know, then later on I got into instruction.
So which came first, the long drive or playing professionally?
The long drive. I had no, you know, ideas about wanting to play pro golf at that time. And I started to hit it really far because I grew late. I was only 5'6" when I graduated high school and I'm 6'2" now. I started to hit the ball really far. People said, oh, you should compete in that long drive contest. It's on ESPN. And I did, and I did very well at it. And then all of a sudden, I just woke up one day and I could shoot really well.
That'd be a nice problem to have right there. I wish I could do that.
I played at UCLA a little bit, and I was a top junior player. But there were like no 62s and 63s or even 65s, you know. I'd throw 68, 67 out there in like the LA City men's or whatever on munis. And then all of a sudden, in 1992, the year that I won, I just woke up one day and I'm like, you know what? I'm shooting really low for no reason. I wasn't practicing more. I didn't change my mental outlook. I just woke up one day and instead of being a +2, I was a +7.
That seems like a good problem to have. In hindsight, do you think there was like a reason for it? Or was it just woke up one day and that was it?
I just woke up one day and that was it. I mean, no joke. I mean, I went from my career low at a round of golf and being 66 and my career low in a tournament was 67 to like, I had a stretch of golf where I shot between 62 and 65, like 8 out of 11 rounds.
Wow. Yeah, that is impressive.
Some of those in tournaments.
Yeah, so then that's really going to ruin the handicap for all of your local games or wherever you're playing, I'd imagine.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. It's kind of funny that like I got on the topic of long drive because I was out, so I'm a member at Windsong Farm in Minneapolis. I'm not sure if you've heard of it or not. We're probably 30 minutes outside of Minneapolis. Very close to Hazeltine, if you're familiar with Hazeltine National. Yeah. And I was on the driving range maybe, it was probably 3-4 weeks ago. And I looked to my right and Kyle Berkshire was next to me. And, you know, I've been seeing his stuff for a long time. I mean, obviously a big name and long drive and does stuff with Bryson. And, you know, he couldn't hit driver on the driving range, but he was hitting, you know, 7 irons that were hitting the back of the range. And it was like one of the most impressive things I've ever seen in the sport of golf. Like the sound that it makes off the clubs just different, and the speed that he has. And apparently he's tried to play now. He's like, that's his thing. He's kind of, yeah, I think he still does a little long drive stuff, but he really wants to pursue it professionally. And I'm curious your thoughts on, you know, making that transition from long drive into all the other aspects of the game, right? Like, what's it going to be like for a guy like that to hit the ball far and straight, but then also have to do everything else that the sport requires at a high level?
So the two most successful, I mean, there were tour players that did well in the World Long Drive Championship back in the day, like Lon Hinkle and Dennis Paulson and stuff like that. But the only two professional long drivers, like true professional long drivers, that had true success on the, you know, the tours was, you know, Jamie Sadlowski and myself. And it's hard. It's a very, the best way I can describe it is when you're a long driver, you're like a track sprinter. And when you're a golfer, you're an NFL football player. And as we well know, there have been Bob Hayes and Ronaldo Nehemiah way before your time. You know, they were sprinters and then they became good football players, but it just doesn't happen because it's a completely different thing to do. I know, like back in the day when I would compete in the World Long Driving Championship in like September, and then I'd have the first stage of the Q school like 3 weeks later, I would have to come back from the long drive and just hit nothing but 60 yard wedges for like a week to get the different, you know, swing under control.
Yeah, get the feel of everything.
Correct.
And I mean, like the game today, as obviously you are very well aware, because I, you know, watch your content, a lot of it is about gaining speed, right? Like all these young kids coming up, you know, you go and you watch college tournaments now. I mean, they just had the USAM at Hazeltine not too long ago here. And, you know, they were tipping it out there. I know it plays like long 7,000s. And these guys were still hitting driver wedges into par fours. How much of the game, you know, is being taught in terms of speed, but then also, you know, you get a lot of these kids with wedges in their hands, and they can't hit it inside of 20 feet. And hard is this to teach?
Okay, so this is actually a very big deal. And I've been very vocal about it. There's everything is a bounce. Now, we there was 100 years of drive for show, putt for dough, which people will still ride that train. And there's not one metric that says that's correct. Not one. You know, obviously you don't want to be out there three putting and four putting, but the best way to lower your handicap and to get better at golf is to hit it farther and more solid. Okay. But here's the other side of it. And one of my students who's going to be going to Stanford next year on a scholarship, and he got a compliment from the Stanford coaches. And then they complimented me that he was trained for speed, but not at the cost of wedges and his physical health. And so there's a big problem right now with a lot of these young players. Sam Bennett, when he was doing well in the Masters in 2023, I put up an Instagram post and I said, there's overemphasis on side bend with Bennett and Neiman and Pereira and, you know, a lot of these young players. I said, I hope I'm wrong, but it's only a matter of time. These guys are ticking time bombs, and no joke, 3 days after I put that post up, Will Zalatoris announced out for the year with back surgery. So, you know, here's my opinion on this. If risking your body long-term gets you an extra 10 or 12 or 15 miles an hour, that allows you to make $30 million by the time you're 30, I'm good with that. But a lot of instruction today is about squeezing that every last mile or two per hour out. And a lot of these movements, it's a cost benefit analysis. If you're putting your body, I mean, the golf swing already punishes your body quite a bit. And if you're putting 30% more pressure on your body with move X, and you're only getting 2 miles an hour or 3 miles an hour benefit, it's just not worth it. So getting back to your original question, let's hit it as far as we can without putting excess stress on our bodies.
So I want to dive into how you actually coach and teach this then, because I'd be curious, and a lot of our, I highly doubt you've heard of our podcast until I reached out, but a lot of our listeners are, call it elite amateur players or club golfers or the people that are, you know, playing competitive golf, you know, at the amateur level, right? Like playing mid-ams and amateur tournaments. And they listen to this stuff and they still train and they take lessons and all of these things. So I'd be curious to hear your perspective on how you train for speed and how you teach it without putting your body at risk. Because I'm hands up, I'm one of those people that have had back and hip issues over the last year and a half. And I'd obviously think part of it is just like my winter training. I hit off mats all the time. I'm swinging really hard. And it does put a strain on your body, especially if you're not doing the right things in the gym and all your other stuff. And I'm only getting older, right? Like I'm 33. So I would love to talk about it.
Being 57, hearing you cry about being 33.
But no, I'm not crying. I'm just trying to get out of it.
No, I'm just giving you. So seriously though, I'll answer your question by saying something a little bit unrelated first. I'm a world long drive champion. People come in, Monty, I want a lesson on my driver. And 95% of the time we never hit driver, because all of the faults that are in the driver are in the wedge as well. So if you train something that's purely for speed, it's not helpful. If you train something that's purely for accuracy, that's not helpful. And we have so much information from modern technology about what happens in good swings. There's not much guesswork anymore. And people don't want to buy into it because it spoils the narratives. But if you make a proper swing change, it should. There's three things that qualify for a proper swing change. It should increase your club head speed. It should improve your dispersion, and it should reduce or at least not increase the amount of pressure you're putting on your body. If it doesn't qualify under all three of those things, it is a bad change, even if you're getting an extra 3 miles an hour or whatever out of it. So there's no such thing as giving up accuracy for speed or giving up speed for accuracy. Proper changes will get you both. And proper changes will, at worst, not increase the pressure on your body and at best decrease it. And the Stanford kid that I'm telling you about, the kid going to Stanford, he's an all-county basketball player. He's 6'5", and he swings 130 miles an hour. And when you watch his swing, you just look at it and go, yeah, that's about as little pressure as you can put on your back swinging 130 miles an hour. And that's what I'm all about. Whenever I have a young junior, little 80, 90-pound boys, and, I want to hit the ball really far. And the kids that hit it really far when they're that small are really, really putting excess pressure on their back and their pelvis. And I'm like, no, let's wait to get a little bigger and stronger before, should I lift weights? No, you're 10. Let your body develop. Then when you start to develop physically, then some of these things. So I just build a good golf swing with them. And I say, you know what? This golf swing is not hurting your body. Oh, let me rephrase. It's hurting your body as little as possible. So you swing as hard as you can doing this. That's how you build speed. I love going on tangents. You build speed by building an efficient motion and then seeing how you can move as fast as you can using that motion.
Well, so then how do you coach, or I guess like when you look at, you know, I feel like lately, and I've been a player who over the past two, three years has really delved into the sport, tried to figure out, you know, where I can get a little bit better. You know, I've worked myself down from, I don't know, 5-6 handicap down to like a +1 with a low of +2. It's like I've been able to get there. But I've also realized that as I got there, I hit my ceiling, right? Like I didn't have a swing that was repeatable or something that I felt like was, you know, going to carry me long term. I would go on these, you know, streaks where like I putt and chip really well, and that's why I was going low, not because I was striping it and, you know, in that zone constantly. And, you know, so I start to do research on the internet and Instagram and follow people like you and kind of take all of it in. And one of the things that I noticed over the last, call it, year or two was talking about like golf body types. Yes. And I had never considered my body type when it came to the swing. So to give you a little bit of context, I'm 6'1", give or take 210 pounds. But my wingspan, my arms are extremely long. Like I probably have a 7-foot wingspan. I mean, I can touch my knees standing up. And then you got other guys, right, that are like, you know, like a Rory McIlroy, who's, you know, all of, I don't know how tall he is. I don't want to butcher it. Maybe like 5'8", 5'9", 5'10", somewhere in there. And he's one of the best, like, best drivers in the world.
Right. I'm more like 5'7".
And you're a long drive champion.
I'm 6'2". He's more like 5'7".
Yeah, he's 5'7". He's a long drive champion. So, right. Like, what's the correlation, or like, how do you figure this stuff out as a golfer trying to hit the ball further when you look at a guy who's 6'5", like your Stanford kid that can hit it 330, and you look at a guy like Rory who's 5'7", it can hit it 330. How do you figure it out, right? How do you figure out what's right for you?
There's two parts to this. So getting back to the wingspan thing, I'm the opposite of you. I'm 6'2", and I only have a 6-foot wingspan. So my arms are shortish. But this is where golfers, and I'm sorry to say golf instructors, completely miss the boat. So nobody questions, you know, Nolan Ryan could throw 100 and something miles an hour. Well, what did he do? Well, he was born to throw at 100 miles an hour. Why can this guy jump 45 inches and this guy can only jump 32? Well, he was born to jump higher. When I won the World Long Driving Championship, I think I was the only person under 200 pounds ever to win it. I'm way over 200 now. But and people say, well, what was your secret? And I go, I didn't work out. I just hit the ball and I was born to hit the ball farther. So to answer your question, everybody, all we're trying to do is reach our ceiling. Not some, oh, well, I need to get to 120. Well, maybe you can't do 120. You know, you can't dunk a basketball. And you don't say, well, I want to be able to do a 360 and take off the free throw line. That's unrealistic. You know, can I learn to jump higher where I can touch the rim? That you can do. And that's the mistake that people make. They come in for a lesson and we make their club head speed with a 7-iron go from 75 to 82. That's a 10% jump. That's huge in a half an hour or 45 minutes. And they're like, okay, what should it be? Because I see that the tour average is 93. And I go, it's the wrong way to look at it. These are the top golfers in the world. They're going to have more potential for speed than you will. But then, you know, you've got, you know, athlete X, he played baseball in high school and football in high school, and then played baseball in college. And now he's learning to play golf and he could hit 400-foot home runs. Well, his ceiling is going to be a lot higher than Joe Accountant, who never played sports. So you have to approach everything that you're not trying to reach some arbitrary level. You're trying to get to your own ceiling. And that is about one thing and one thing only, is making efficient movements and properly sequenced movements. And yes, some speed training and yes, some, you know, lifting and stretching and stuff. But people that are trying to squeeze 2 more miles an hour, with some funky motion that they saw on YouTube or Instagram, you're just going to hurt yourself and you're not going to play better golf.
Yeah. I mean, quite frankly, they could probably get 2 miles an hour better just by finding the right matchup of equipment with shaft, ball, and club head, if we're being honest. Now, 10 miles an hour, that's different, but right, 2 miles right, an hour. Yeah, I hear you. So then is, I mean, go ahead.
Everybody not competing at the World Long Driving Championship level, including PGA Tour players, are not maximizing their speed the right way.
So then my follow-up question is, how do you maximize your speed the right way? And I know, like, obviously it would be way easier if you had a person in front of you, you could kind of see how they swing all these things. But as somebody like myself, who over the years was trying to figure it out online and figure out my game to get to that point where I felt like when I went in for a lesson, I at least knew what I was doing, right? I can kind of communicate with my instructor what I was feeling and seeing in my swing. How do you figure that out as somebody that, you know, maybe has just got a camera and is trying to realistically figure out what they can do with their swing?
So here's the hard part about that. I did this for a presentation at the PGA show for Chris Como at his teaching seminar. The problem is most of the information out there is antiquated. Okay. Almost every single tried and true cliche that gets thrown around at the driving range and by old school teachers has been proven to be incorrect with modern technology. Like, I'll just give you a couple of examples. You know, for 100 years, the golf swing has been taught really load up that right side and push off that right foot. Well, nobody good does that. Everybody starts to drift. All good players and long hitters drift into the left side as they're reaching the top, and they push off the left side. Okay. Then there's been, you know, maximize your lag by holding it for as long as you can. That's been proven to be completely bogus and horrible for so many reasons that I can't even list. There's too many to list there. So when Chris asked me to do the presentation, he goes, how many can you come up with? I said, 50 or 60. And he goes, well, there can't be that many. I came up with 34 in 2 minutes. So that's, you know, so it's just like anything else. If you start with a bad premise, you're not going to go anywhere. And there's, you know, and I'm sorry to say, you know, you watch golf on TV and you see Joachim Niemann with that uber side bend and Will Zalatoris. Look at these 150-pound guys hit 320 and it's from doing this. Well, no, you know, it's not from doing that. And then the opposite is true. You hear the commentators say Scottie Scheffler's foot slide. Oh, that's no good. The average golfer shouldn't do anything close to that because only Scottie can do that and keep balance and blah, blah, blah and whatnot. And the irony of that is that every single tour player measured puts that lateral force on their right foot. They just unweight their right side later so their foot doesn't slip, you know? So now all of a sudden you've got people on TV saying, do this, and it's actually horrible. Don't do that, and that's actually what good players do. So, you know, and this is not a he said, she said. These things have been measured. It's, you know, and I'm, you know, the way I look at it is when they measure 150 tour players and 147 of them do X, well, X is probably a pretty good idea. And there's just so many, you know, bad things. Like a perfect example is everybody's taught, you know, hold this angle in the impact so you can have shaft lean and so you can have a flat or a bowed left wrist at impact. Well, yeah, that's what the free springs tell us. But when the tour players are measured from shaft parallel before impact to shaft parallel after impact, 149 out of 150 players measured had their wrists moving this way, coming into impact.
The opposite way. Who was the one? Do you know?
Daniel Berger.
Oh, well, and he's got back injuries and other stuff going on too.
Okay. So then this goes, well, if they're releasing this angle and they're like this at impact, they must be like this coming into impact. And I'd be like, yes. And then my next comment is, if you're holding lag, if you're holding this angle, how do you get the lead risks at that angle? And so, you know, it's a big rabbit hole that if you try to go down it yourself without any guidance, you're pretty much going to end up, you know, lost. You mean, go ahead.
I was going to say the other thing that I know that you talk about a lot is the hip speed and yes, club head speed, and that hip speed is not good for club head speed, or it's not the thing that powers club head speed. Like a lot of people think they get to the top and got to have fast hips, so you got to turn your hips and, you know, get there. And I see you a lot talk about like keeping your back to the target. It's not actually about like twisting your hips faster. I think that's also a misnomer that I'd love for 100%. You to talk about, because you talk about it really well.
Faster hips aren't better. All I say is there's not a direct correlation between faster hips, more open hips, and distance. And all you know, because I don't want people slowing their hips down. I want them delaying their hip turn. So that's where I go on that. But, you know, like I said, it's been measured. Hip speed and torso speed is faster on the LPGA Tour on average than it is on the PGA Tour. So, you know, and
is that why they hit it straighter? Is there a correlation there?
They don't hit it straighter. They hit it shorter. And when you hit it shorter, you don't miss the fairway as often.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So if you hit it 250 yards, you're going to hit the fairway more than you do when you hit it 330. Right.
So like if you see an LPGA Tour player hit it 250 yards and they're 5 yards inside the fairway, a ball that's 320 is out of bounds.
Yeah.
But here's the one that always freaks everybody out is on the hip speed thing. And, you know, we can go down the rabbit hole of it's the hip deceleration curve that creates the club head speed. And that's a rabbit hole that golfers can get in big trouble with. But the last time I competed in the World Long Driving Championship was 2015. I was 48 years old, and I was still creating more than 200 miles an hour ball speed at 48. And my golf course swing, which was about 184 miles an hour ball speed, that hip speed was actually faster than the 205 mile an hour long drive swing. So I was actually, the hips were actually, so, but the hips were decelerating faster, which accelerated this better, which set it down the chain to the club. So the point of the discussion is not try to stall your hips. It's proper sequencing in the transition and proper loading and unloading of the wrists is where club head speed comes from. Okay.
So, go ahead. Keep going.
And when golfers, so I'd say 95% of golfers over the handicap of zero accelerate their arms late, which is the opposite of what you, oh, my swing is all arms and I start the downswing with my arms. Well, again, it's been measured. It's physically impossible to start a downswing with your arms unless you stop at the top, and elite players and long hitters accelerate their arms and hands earlier than the average golfer. So you can see, you know, almost everything I've said in the last 10 minutes is completely the opposite of what's been said for 100 years. And if these things were my opinion, I'd say, yeah, go ahead and tell me I'm full of crap. You know, I get these things to work, but it's just, you know, what I do. But these are objective measurements of golfers of every skill level and every club head speed. So many misnomers. And, you know, slow, smooth tempo is another one. That's the one that kills the average golfer. See, 10 or 15% of my lessons, someone walks in, oh, I'm a pretty good golfer, but my club head speed is so low. I'm like, yeah, your backswing is too slow. Oh, you're supposed to have slow, smooth tempo. And I go, like, who? And the, you know, guys my age will say Ernie Els. Younger people will say Matsuyama or Morikawa or M. And I'll say, okay. And I'll put their swing up to next to one of those guys. And those guys are in their finish before the backswing is over. So when the backswing is that slow, you got two choices. Swing in a proper rhythm and have slow club head speed, or rush the transition. And that's when people say, oh, I got quick, I need to slow down, and then it gets worse. So, you know, I'm ranting and raving here. It's just, it's very frustrating for me because I want golfers to get better and have fun. And every single one of the people that come to me are people that are ready to give up because I'm not having fun. I have 18 swing thoughts. None of them work. And so I feel the pain of the average golfer all day, every day. So it just turns into these, you know, 5, 6, 10 minute rants of, they say you're supposed to do this wrong. They say you're supposed to do this wrong. And, you know, I come off like a crazy old man sometimes, and I know that.
That's all right. I mean, I can tell. So since you're crazy like me, I can tell you what I'm working on right now, and I'd love to get your opinion. So the one thing that I have noticed and started to put into my swing is, this is a feeling for me, but I think it's what you just touched on, which is when I get to the top of the backswing, my downswing starts before my hips turn. So I'm trying to feel my hands get in front of my hip. And then, you know, once my elbow is in front of my hip, then my hips turn after. And that's what creates the power through. So that's one. But the second is, and I mean, I tell you what, Monty, I tried every golf trainer, golf tool, everything to get shallow for like 2 years because I was the guy that got here. I went over the top. It was horrible. I hit like pull cuts 30 yards, and I made it work to get to like a 2 or 1 handicap because I figured out how to make it work. And I got it better, but now my feel is almost when I get to the top, it's almost being steep. Like it's almost like I get to the top and then my hands come straight down in front of my hips, and I play my irons at, I think I'm at 5 upright right now because of my like how long my arms are. And just the way that when they come down, like the turf interaction, I need super upright lie angles so that the ball doesn't, you know, completely block off the face of the planet. And it feels like the more steep I'm able to get and the more upright my clubs are, the easier it is for it to just kind of flow here, get to the top and just come straight down and straight through. And so I'm curious if you like, do you see guys play these super upright lie angles or anything like, am I absolutely crazy, or am I kind of onto something here with my current instructor?
Well, I never, ever say no good to a feel or an idea that works, no matter how crazy it is. And I could tell you some stories about some of the crazy feels that people have used, and they do nothing of the sort, and then their swing looks great. So as far as your swing is concerned, I haven't seen it, so I'm doing a little bit of guessing here, but it sounds like to me you're making something work versus doing it. I don't talk about golf swing in terms of right and wrong most of the time. I usually talk about it as easier and harder. And it sounds like you're making it a little harder than is necessary. I mean, like I said, I might look at it and go, well, I was full of crap there. This is perfect. But the way you describe it, it doesn't sound wrong because you're a plus handicap. But here's the way I look at things for someone that's like in their 20s and 30s. Are you still going to be able to do this when you're 50 and 60? And if the answer is no, then we need to get rid of it now. Okay. But again, I may look at your swing and go, well, this is what you're feeling, but this looks great. And this works.
I just sent it to you on Instagram, so you can pull it up as I'm asking this question. You can kind of, I mean, it's not the best angle. It was, you know, from an on course, but you can kind of see what it looks like in real time. And my follow-up question to it will be, or it'll be along the lines of thinking that, like I was always told, it's definitely true, but that, you know, early extension, right? Like that's what every single amateur golfer, you typically when they come into an instructor is told they have early extension, right? Like they kind of hump the ball a little bit. They're not able to create any space. And so for a while, I was almost like sticking my butt out in my routine to kind of feel like I got that space. And that feels like it's one of the most common taught or practices in golf that like everybody hears. And I know you got something on your website as well about early extension. So now I want to talk about it because it's the number one thing that everybody seems to do that's a flaw in the golf swing. And I'm curious what you think about, you know, like the term early extension and how golfers can kind of fix it.
Okay, so here's the big misconception. Early extension is not a swing fault, regardless of what you've been told or what you think. It is a solution. If you, in the way your swing currently works, if you didn't early extend, you would hit the ball worse or miss it completely. There's always a reason why you're early extending. Is the shaft too vertical? Are you stuck on the right side and you're forced to slide your pelvis too much toward the target to get to your left side? Are you rotating your right hip out on the downswing instead of your left hip back? Are you standing too close to the ball? Were you too bent over at address? That's five of about 30. So I always call early extension is a cough. Okay. Is your cough an actual illness? It's not. You've got a bacterial infection and your body's trying to expel it. You smoke too much. Your body's trying to expel the tar. Your bedroom is too dry. And because of the dry air, it makes you cough. In none of those instances is the cough a disease. It's a solution to another problem. And that's what early extension is. And people are told, oh, well, you early extend because, you know, your core is weak and your hamstrings are tight and blah, blah, blah. That's not true either. Improving those things will help you overcome your swing fault and stay in flexion. But, you know, like Jack Nicklaus early extended, okay? Because he was vertical and across the line at the top and his pelvis moving slightly toward the golf ball flattened the shaft out so he could hit a fade from the inside. So, you know, so purely solving, if you brought me 100 golfers of varying handicaps, plus 2 to 30. And I was like Thanos and I could snap my fingers and completely eliminate their early extension. All 100 of them would be worse golfers the next day.
Yeah. Cause they're so used to the movement that they've had to do to hit it the way they had to hit it to play decent golf.
Correct. So you said I didn't get the swing video here.
Oh, did it not? I mean, dude, you and I have had troubles. Yeah, we've had problems via here. Technology today. Let's see. Oh yeah, it's still sending. I'll turn it on my Wi-Fi so you can see it. I don't think it's bad. I think it's the, you know, one, I'm obviously trying to get better, so I've tried. There you go. I just said you should have it now.
Yeah.
But it's like you'll be able to see how low my arms kind of hang. You know, what I have to do in the takeaway and then kind of the, you know, what I'm feeling is like a kind of steep downswing with super upright lie angles to hit
a
straight.
That's not a steep downswing in my opinion.
Purely? Well, okay. That's good to hear.
I mean, to me, all this is, let me look at it slow motion here. See, that's not a steep downswing in my opinion. In my opinion, your issue is, so this is maybe the most misunderstood issue in the swing. And I know it's misunderstood because every time I put it up on social media, a third of the people say, I've never heard of this before. A third of the people say, I don't understand this at all. And a third of the people say, you're a moron. Okay, which, I mean, that's fine. And what I say is, and again, this has been measured. This is not something I invented out of thin air. Elite golfers rotate their right hip around the center of their pelvis in the backswing, and then the left hip around the center of their pelvis in the downswing. 95% of golfers rotate their left hip around the center of their pelvis in the backswing, and their right hip around the center of their pelvis in the downswing. And all the people that call me a moron say, you can't move one hip without the other. And I understand that. But when you do it the long way, it brings the center of the pelvis out, which is early extension. And that's what you're doing. You're a little bit stuck on the right side. And in order to get to the left side, you've got to drive your right hip out toward the ball and toward the target. And that's why you early extend.
So like if I, you know, people aren't going to be able to see this listening, but, you know, if I stand up, you know, and this is on YouTube, this is my right and I'm over the ball, you know, and the backswing, right? The hip goes back this way.
Correct.
And you're saying when I come down, it's doing this.
Yes.
When in reality, when you in the backswing, it should be coming forward and then that way.
Okay, no.
So
okay.
I feel like the hip has to go back, then in the swing.
No.
You
got that far
right.
You don't make the mistake in the backswing. So go back to the beginning of the backswing. There you go. Beginning of the back, end of the backswing. Sorry.
Okay.
Now, get your weight more left.
Okay,
now, bring your left hip away from the golf ball.
Yeah. So the tiger drill that people see, he's doing that. He's getting his, you know,
yes,
butt back and out. That's what he's feeling.
Correct. And instead of doing what you just did there, you're firing your right hip out, and that brings the center of the pelvis. And when the center of the pelvis moves toward the ball, you're going to early extend, even if you're the most fit, flexible person on earth.
Yeah. And so if somebody's not watching the video, I mean, I'll try to explain it the best I can. You know, if you're standing over the ball and you start to, in your takeaway, naturally, I think what we're saying is that the right hip is going back, right? And then to the top of the downswing, when you start to turn back or you start to go towards the ball, the right hip goes towards the ball, but then also the left is. And in reality, what needs to happen is they both need to go back away from the ball. And
so
that's how you create the space.
So the easiest way that most people understand it is when you start the downswing, the left hip is going away from the ball and the right hip is going toward the target.
Got it. That's what needs to happen, you're saying.
That's what needs to happen.
That's what needs to happen.
And what most golfers do is fire the right hip and knee toward the golf ball.
Sure, which is what I'm doing, it sounds like.
Correct. And the reason why that happens is that's how you get to your left side the easiest if you're stuck on the right side at the top.
Yeah, and that's probably why you would early extend and kind of get on your toes a little bit too. I imagine something that happens from that. That's what happens
right,
for me.
And this is such a common problem. So here's why golf is so hard, okay? So everybody, when they learned, including myself, you rotate and load up the right side. I talked about this before. You load up the right side in the backswing, and then you shift left on the downswing. And very few of, you know, I'd have to think hard to think of any tour player that does it that way. Most of them, basically all of them, as they reach the top of the swing, you'll see them. They have that little drift into the left side as they reach the top of the swing. And when I put golfers in that position, without exception, this is a reverse pivot, I'm not doing this. And then I show them the video next to a tour player and they're like, yeah, that's not a reverse pivot. I have an Instagram post that was from like 3 years ago where I show, you've probably heard of these players. It was Nicklaus, young Jack Nicklaus, Tiger, Hogan, Snead, Dustin Johnson, and Justin Rose. And five of the six of them are hitting driver. And all of them are well into the left side when they reach the top of the swing. And their right leg, because of their right hip working way behind them, is angled toward the target about 15-ish degrees. Whereas 95% of amateurs at the top of the swing, their right leg is straight up and down because their pelvis moved it correctly.
Me.
Yeah, exactly right. So then you're forced to fire that right hip really hard to get yourself to the left side. And there's your early extension.
Yeah, I'm one, you're explaining me. Two, I'm like processing it all. Three, I'm trying to think of the one guy who wasn't hitting driver in that example of the six. I'm curious who
Rose.
It is.
Rose.
It's Justin Rose. Okay.
So here, you know, I mean, for the people that will actually be watching, this is the one that freaks everybody out. Because whenever, I mean, there are no exceptions to what I'm about to say. When I put people in a proper pelvis motion in the backswing, there are no exceptions. This is a reverse pivot. I'm not doing this. So,
and what you're doing is the people, you know, they're swinging, you're having them in their backswing go forward, almost like opposite, like backswing, and you're having them go forward.
In the second half, no, not tilting toward the target, rotating the hip around and behind you. No, the right hip around and behind you.
Oh, the right hip.
There you go.
Got it.
That's the movement that all great players do.
Yeah.
And so here, let's see.
Yeah, I mean, that's the infamous like screenshot of Tiger Woods, right? How he does that feel, and that's what he's feeling.
Right. So there's young Jack right there. Look at how angled his right leg is, and look at how far toward the target his hips are.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like his right leg is almost like hyperextending.
And there's Hogan. And then there's Tiger.
Yeah, they're all almost identical.
Okay. And so you saw all of that. So here's vertical. All of their right legs were like this from proper pelvis rotation and shift. Recentering, you'll hear it called. Okay. Sure. Whereas every golfer shows up, their right leg is like this. And so in a measured thing, we can say it real easy. Elite golfers reach their maximum right side foot pressures somewhere between shaft parallel P2, for those that know the nerd top, and left arm parallel P3. Okay. And then they start drifting back to the left. Scheffler, DeChambeau do it really early. Rory does it very late. It doesn't matter. They're all moving left as they approach the top of the swing. 95% of golfers reach their maximum right side pressure at the top of the swing. So they're too far right, and their momentum is moving right. So they have to make some sort of, you know, massive lunge, sliding the pelvis, lunging the upper body, spinning the shoulders, all sorts of bad stuff to get the club to the ball because they're stuck on the right side. Everything I just said is going to be early extension.
Yeah, so the spark notes of all of it, right, is that you need to be, I don't know if the right term is moving left or like drifting left before you're at the top of your backswing, where a lot of people on their backswing, you know, they're moving right to the top. And then as they start the downswing, they're already too late, right? Because they haven't moved left before the top of the backswing.
That is correct. Everything you said is spot on, exactly the way
I'd like to think. I'm a quick learner. The hard part's actually doing it, right? Like that's where it gets difficult.
Look, I can do it and I know better, but because I learned the wrong way, if I don't play for a while, if it's at the end of a long day and I'm tired, I'm loading up that right side at the top and shoving my body toward the target at the bottom, and I spray it all over the place when I do that. So, you know, I know better and I know how to do it right, and I still make the mistake because I did it the wrong way for 30 years.
Yeah. Well, so I do want to ask, like, and I know I'm taking up a lot of your time, kind of the last thing I'm curious of, you know, we're coming to the winter season here in Minnesota, right? Like, I think we got maybe a week or two left of 60s, 50 degree weather where we can play. All the courses start to shut down, prepare for the off season. And, you know, it's a big time that people start to spend a lot of time in simulators when they can, you know, throughout the week. I'm fortunate enough, I've got one, like this is my studio, is my at-home golf simulator, so I do a ton of practicing. And over the last, call it 2 years, a lot of my practice was focused on speed, hitting the driver really well, and it translated to this year. But I think what lacked for me was obviously my short game and my ball striking, because I didn't spend a ton of time on it. And so I'm curious, like, as you're talking to a pretty Minnesota-centric audience, you know, if you were writing like an hour or maybe a 2-hour practice session, How do people need to split them up? Because I think I took the wrong approach of focusing on speed, on just the driver, like getting really good there. And I think I need to change it this off season. And so I'm curious your thoughts on how to do that in the best way possible.
So the first thing, I actually played in the US Junior, the USGA Junior in Minneapolis at Wayzata Country Club.
Oh yeah, they're going through a renovation. They're about to. They just started blowing up some holes there. It's the home of a good friend of mine, Lumpy, Mr. Tim Heron, if you know Tim.
Oh, I played with Tim a few. Actually, he was my partner in a horse race during one of the fun days during the Corn Ferry event in New Mexico where he went to school. So I know Tim. I love Tim.
Yeah, he's a member at our club as well. His son Carson is a very good player. He just won the Minnesota State Open this year. So he's not only is he a great golfer, but it's starting to translate down to his kids too. Are all coming up and taking our money and beating us out there too. So
it's funny. Tim told me when we were playing in a Nike Corn Ferry event, he goes, you know, I knew your dad as a baseball player, and I was so, because he caddied during that U.S. Junior. He was probably 12 or 13 at the time, he was mad. He wanted a caddy for me, and someone else got. But anyways, so golf is the only sport where people are under the impression that they can make changes at full speed, and it's ridiculous. Track sprinters that are adjusting their stride jog around the track until they get their stride right. Baseball pitchers, when their stride or their release point is off, throw 60, 70 mile an hour fastball lobs into the catcher until they get it right. In basketball, when a guy has trouble with his shooting, he shoots little shots around the basket and shoots free throws. Football, when the timing of the play is off, they do a walkthrough. And then they do half speed, and then they do three quarter speed until they get the movements right. Whereas golfers saying like, "Oh, I'm just going to go out and rip driver, and if I can get it right with driver, I can get it right with anything." Well, it doesn't work that way, because basically all of our swing faults that we have are a misunderstanding on how to create club head speed. So if you're out there with driver, you're just going to ingrain all of the faults you're trying to get rid of. If you go to a tour event on Friday afternoon, late in the day, 75% of the guys on the range at that time were the guys that missed the cut. And they're out there hitting little three-quarter wedges, trying to get their sequencing and their rhythm down. You know, as a matter of fact, you know, when I practice, I basically don't hit driver at all. I might hit one or two out of 100 balls. And it's funny, one of the best speed training drills is taking an L wedge only to left arm parallel and trying to hit it solid as far as you can from left arm parallel. It teaches you how to sequence properly, because if you fire your hips and leave your arms and hands behind, you're going to chunk it and shank it. But if you sequence properly, you'll increase your speed and you'll flush the ball.
Wow. So take your lob wedge or your most lofted wedge, left arm parallel, and just try and hit that thing as straight and far as you can.
And if you hit it thin or fat or not in the middle of the club face, it's telling you your sequence is terrible. Not just bad, it's terrible. And working on speed only training is just going to make your dispersion go this way.
Yeah, that was me.
You know, what good is more speed if your sequencing is not correct? And then the opposite is true. When your sequencing gets better, your club head speed goes up.
Yeah, you hit the center of the face and naturally it's going to go further. Yeah.
Yeah. The advice I give golfers, there's really only one true way to get better. Okay. There's a reason why the USGA did a study like 20, 25 years ago. It said, once you've been playing for 3 years, you're not going to get any better than that. And it's true and false at the same time. If you maintain your current ideas and narrative, once you played for 3 years, you're never going to get better. You have to change your perception and your process. Okay. like I said, there's one true way to get better. You have to find an instructor who knows what he's doing. Not always easy, because there are a lot of, just like doctors and lawyers, there are bad people out there that don't know what they're doing. And then clear your mind of everything that you think is right. Okay? Because all of your perceptions right now are creating the problems that you have. So unless you get rid of them, you're just going to stay where you're always going to fall back to where you are. You know, you might make a little change and it like works really well, but you're going to revert to the norm unless you change your ideas on what a good golf swing is. And even people who like, Monty, you know, I religiously follow your Instagram and I've gotten rid of all my old ideas and I only try to do what you say. There aren't many of those because, you know, whatever. But even those people have poor perceptions on what to do. So you really educate, this is going to sound ridiculous, but educating yourself on what actually happens in a good golf swing and not the myths and misconceptions that have been around for 100 years. That's the first step in becoming a better golfer.
Well, I don't think it sounds crazy. And I think golf is truly one of those sports that, you know, you can go crazy, you know, looking at all the information, looking at all the different instructors. And I think you make a great point that if you just started with the basics of looking at the top 150 players in the world, right, and what's the consistencies between all of them, you're going to unlock 70-80% of a lot of good in there, right? Then, yeah, there's that 10-20% that make those guys what they are. But
right. And the goal, we're obviously not going to do it as well as they do it, okay? But their move, like a jump, nobody is going to shoot 30-foot jumpers as well as Steph Curry. But if you're mechanically sound like he is, you're going to make more jumpers. The same thing works in the golf swing. Nobody expects anybody to swing like 2000 Tiger or Adam Scott or DeChambeau or whatever. But if we aspire to do the things that tour players do, we can become better versions of ourselves. We've talked about several of them. Allowing your weight to drift into the left side before you start your downswing. That's not hard to do. That's very, a 90-year-old man who shoots 100 can do that. Okay? Just not as well as DeChambeau or Scheffler. So you're not trying to be one of those guys. You're trying to be the best version of yourself. And that involves, okay, I'm going to stop doing all of this nonsense that they say. I make a joke. You start a sentence with "they say," it's probably wrong. The information is out there. Now, there's always two different discussions here. Mechanically speaking, this is what good players do. There's no debate. We're still learning, but there's no debate. Like a perfect example of a bad myth. Another one: the better the golfer, the more firmly they grip it.
I haven't heard that one.
Yeah.
It sounds and feels wrong to me, but I've always thought that we don't want to have tightness in the hands. You want it to be kind of loose and flowing.
So it's been measured. The elite golfers have much more firm grip at address than everybody else. And what happens is when you grip it too loose, you got to increase the grip pressure. Like an elite golfer only increases his grip pressure about 20%. Okay. A 30 handicapper increases it like 70%.
So then in their swing, they're gripping and now it's going to change a lot, right? It's going to change the shaft. It's going to change their wrists. It's going to change.
Correct.
A million things.
And the other thing is, you know, a team of biomechanical engineers studied me. They're like, why does this 180-pound guy with no muscle hit it farther than all of these giant Neanderthals? And what they discovered is I have literally 100% percentile grip pressure. I recorded the highest dynamometer reading that they had ever had. That's the thing where you squeeze it and the number comes up.
Yep.
more than NFL players, Major League Baseball players, all the hundreds of professional athletes. I squeezed the tightest. And they're like, well, he was able with that grip pressure to control the force of the club head speed. So his body allowed him to speed the club up more. When you grip the club really loose, your body won't allow you to speed the club up because you'll lose control over it.
Interesting.
So, and again, you know, this seems counterintuitive. And I'm like, I get it. It seems counterintuitive, but it's been measured. It's a fact. And do you know who the Shark Game chef is?
I do, yeah. My follow is stuff. He's he does stuff with, is it Keith Mitchell? Does he do a lot of stuff
Parker
with him?
Parker McLaughlin. Yep. He's a Bruin like myself. Everybody hates me now.
Well, we're from Minnesota, so us Gopher fans are pretty happy about
that. Yeah, you just kicked our ass the other day. So he did a presentation at a PGA seminar I was just at yesterday, the day before yesterday. And he said it exactly right. I couldn't have put it better myself. He said, golfers do it backwards. They grip the club really, really loose, and then they try to control it by having a bunch of tension in their neck and shoulders and arms. What you want is you want to grip it as firmly as you can with your hands and then have your arms, neck, and shoulders be loose and relaxed.
Sounds like something I can work on this offseason.
So this is a perfect example on how amateurs with a myth that they've heard for 100 years are actually doing the opposite of what's correct. Because good players, and you know, I did my own unscientific independent study. I have my PGA Tour instructor badge. And PGA Tour players are really, really polite and forthcoming when you're trying to learn something. If you try to solicit them as a client, they'll throw their club at you. But if you want to learn something, 90% of them go, you know, can I ask you a question? Absolutely. I said, putting green, chipping green, driving range. Shake my hand, how firmly you grip it. Oh, I don't grip it that firmly at all. That's what they said. And then they cut off the circulation in my hand.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Even with the putter?
Well, think about it. When you watch great putters, do they have a nice, firm movement like this? Or is the club flopping around in their hands like a fish?
Yeah, it's firm. I had always thought that you're supposed to kind of grip it as tight as you could, and then you kind of let that tension go, and then you go.
That's not what good players do.
Wow, they're pretty firm all the way through?
All the way through.
And with chipping, even on like, you know, short field shots or like flop shots around the greens, it's firm? Wow.
Absolutely. Okay? Now, that is a skill that you need to develop. Gripping it firmly and still allowing free motion here, that's something that takes time to learn because you're grip loose to gripping it loose. Okay. Try getting the ball out of thick sand or out of deep rough, gripping it like a baby bird or an open toothpaste tube.
Yeah, you grip it pretty firm when you got to do that because you don't want the club face to twist, right? Like that's the difference.
This is the big people associate tightness in their arms with loose grip pressure. It takes practice to have a firm grip pressure with the hands and then relax and loose arms and shoulders. You're not going to go out to the chipping green or the driving range and get that done today. It takes time. And again, I get yelled at all the time. This is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Everyone knows you're supposed to grip it loose. That's what Sam Snead said. Grip it like a bird. Well, people don't know the second half of Snead's statement was grip it like a bird, like an eagle trying to get away from you. He death gripped it on purpose.
Well, I got a lot to work on this offseason, Monty, and this certainly, if you're open to it, will not be the last time we have you on the Member Guest podcast. I can't thank you enough for the time, the knowledge, and for what it's worth. I don't know if it's worth a lot coming from me. I don't think you're crazy. I think a lot of this stuff makes sense, and it's obviously a reason why I've been following you for a while. So I'll make sure that all the listeners and followers, you know, give you a follow on Instagram and follow your stuff because it's helped me tremendously. And it's going to continue to help as I'm on this journey. I'm trying to get to a +3 next year from like a +1, 1.5. And as we know, like, you know, it's a stroke or two every round that makes the difference. And getting the dispersion down Obviously working on things like chipping and putting, and maybe your firm grip's going to be the thing that unlocks. Or maybe I'll just wake up like you one day and be a plus seven. That would be like the easier thing, but I don't know if it's going to happen for me.
I'm going to leave you and everybody listening with one thing. You know, all of this was like I was the mad professor up on the stage doing a lecture. But when it comes down to improving, there's one really good way to clear your mind of all of these ideas that you think you have to do to make a good swing and get one thing right. For you, every golfer, it's going to be something different. Don't be working on more than one thing at a time. Every golfer, if you will improve, if you get one piece of good information and your entire swing thought process is set up, do that one thing right and hit the ball. If you clear your mind and simplify the process to one thought, one better movement, it could be grip pressure, whatever. Get set up correctly, make that one movement correctly, hit the ball the best you can, rinse and repeat until you don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah, I love it. I appreciate it. I know our listeners are going to appreciate it. And again, I can't thank you enough for coming on and spending time with me. And again, it won't be the last. Next time I'm out in LA, I'm going to have to track you down so we can do something on course and do a lesson so we can fix some stuff.
For sure. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, Monty. Row the boat. Sky Yuma. Go Gophers.
Take care.